Good afternoon. This is Walt Harrington sitting in this afternoon in the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest is Joe Mackel, author of Plain Secrets, An Outsider Among the Amish. Good afternoon, Joe.
Hi, Walt. How are you?
Fine. A beautiful sort of quiet saga, I suppose, of a single family in Ashland, Ohio, who are members of the Schwarzenruber Amish sect. And you, Joe, are a member of the English, which, of course, is everyone else in the world except for the members of the Schwarzenruber. And you're a neighbor. And more than a decade ago, the Shelter family, as you call them, moved into an English house next door to you, and you drove by repeatedly, and you would notice the house changing. You write, "As the Shelter family moved in, the accoutrements of being English moved out. I came home one day to find a toilet near the street and an outhouse being built. Electrical wires were cut and removed, pastel-colored wallpaper peeled off the walls, linoleum stripped and discarded, carpet ripped off the floors. Soon shutters found their place next to a burn barrel or were stored somewhere to be used for some as-of-yet unimagined need. It was the de-Englishing of the house." Tell us how this journey began with your neighbor.
Okay, but Samuel Shetler is my neighbor, and they live about, my driveway and his house are about a mile away, but I have to drive by his house every day to get anywhere. And we just started waving to each other, which, I mean, I do. I live out in the country, and you just wave to people, and he waved back in a really kind of exuberant, friendly way that I found really interesting and wanted to find out about him. So then we just started talking a little bit, and the big moment for us came when he learned that his mother had died, and she was living in Canada with the Schwarzenruber sect there in the community. And his wife, Samuel's wife Mary, was just days away from giving birth to their, at the time, I believe it was their third child. So I didn't want to insult him or anything, but I volunteered to drive. I said, if my driving you up and back will help, I'd be happy to do that. So Samuel got permission from his bishop, and had the bishop said no, that would have been it. But the bishop was...
That would have been it, meaning that Samuel would not have been able to go to his mother's funeral.
That's right. Or he would have had to just take the Greyhound up to Canada and not be there for his wife giving birth to their third child.
And this was because he could not drive a car himself or take a ride in a car.
Right, right. The Schwarzenrubers only take rides in cars if it's an emergency, like in this case, not, you know, missing your mother's funeral or missing your wife's giving birth. And because there are many other sects that can take rides any just about anywhere. Some Amish are picked up for work every day by English. But the Schwarzenrubers, it's really confined to doctor's visits, emergencies, or anything involving anyone's health if they have to get to a hospital. But that's about it.
You identify the Schwarzenrubers as the most conservative of all the conservative Amish enclaves.
Right.
What's the difference? Something. What's the difference between the Schwarzenrubers and the other collections of Amish?
Okay, well, I guess you have to look at the Amish as the different sects as being on a continuum. And the new, at least in Ohio, and I really only know about the ones in Ohio, the most liberal are called the New Order Amish. They can drive tractors on the road, for instance, with rubber wheels. They have indoor plumbing. They have a lot of other things that the... that the Schwarzenrubers can't go anywhere near. Next to them, next to the New Order on the continuum, is the Old Order, at least in Ohio. And there are a lot, they can do much less than the New Order, but they, for instance, will have battery-powered lights on the back of their buggies, which, and I live around some of the Old Order, and coming up on the back of a buggy that has flashing red lights on the back that are battery-powered is great because you can actually see them. The Schwarzenrubers refuse to put anything on their buggies except a second lantern and 72 inches of reflective tape So in everything from what they put on their buggies to how they live to what they'll allow in their home, even other Amish sects look at them as unnecessarily conservative.
The special thing, of course, about your book is that as a result of being given approval to take Samuel to his mother's funeral in Ontario, you came to actually slowly, you and your family, become what you characterize as genuine friends, although with a line between you, one based upon that of faith and community, and that this friendship over time actually became really something very, very rare. How common is it for members of the Schwarzenegger to actually become friends with people who are of the outside world?
Well, something I have to admit, Walt, is that when I first met these people, I didn't even know they were Schwarzenegger. I didn't know how conservative they are or that they rarely interact with the English. I just assumed, as a lot of people do, that the Amish were the Amish, and that was it. So only gradually did I learn that they were the Schwarzenegger and how conservative they were. Then I tried to find books on them, and there are none. Mine is the first on the Schwarzenegger Amish, although they do show up in some other books. But it's just getting access to them is what's been so difficult. Because you don't just swoop in and then think that you're going to write a book on the Schwarzenegger's, because they won't let you in. And much of this I did not know, but the longer we were friends, we'd probably known each other for a week before I knew that it would be a great book and a great story, just because of how they lived, and they just fascinated me. But after a while, when I was able to talk Samuel into it, it took a long time, he finally agreed that it would be okay to write a book, as long as he had some kind of plausible deniability, and if we kept it between us.
In other words, you agreed to not use their actual names.
Right.
Although you did identify them by geographical location, there's no doubt that his own bishop and the members of his church will know who he is now that your book has been published.
That's true. I did not change anything else, and I tell the reader that at the beginning of the book, because it was really important to me. The odd thing is that there are only about 12 Schwarzenegger surnames in the area where I live, and two guys down the road are named Shetler. And it's hard. But anyone who would read the book who knew this family, especially when you have a daughter who died when she was 9, it would not take anyone long to identify the family.
We're going to get back to that after we sort of fill out the outlines of the story and what you learned and what the experience was like when it comes to how they have responded to your book. But I do want to send out the invitation to our callers to call in to ask questions. The numbers here are 333-9455. And for those outside of the area, 1-800-333-9455. Joe, let's move along to what it is you actually came to begin to learn about the value of the way they lived and what you consider your conflicted feelings about the way they live. Clearly, you clearly identify that they live in what they believe to be faith to their belief in God and in essentially resistance or denial of the worldly.
Yeah. Sorry, were you finished, Walt?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Okay. I'm more conflicted now after the book than I ever was before, even though I was also conflicted then. It's clearly, as I say at one point, with a war going on and terrorism and everything else we were living in, it's impossible not to be attracted to their dedication to pacifism and peace. And that I'm not conflicted with at all. It's just that I think they pay a price for that, perhaps, because they won't fight anything. If you showed up at their house today and said, "We're taking your house," they would move, and just to avoid any kind of trouble. I love the way they take care of the land, and I love the way they just have said basically no to the way we live, especially when it comes to technology and mass media. I love the way that the families are together a lot, especially the Schwarzentrubers. A lot of the other sects have had to, and orders, have had to move off the farm just for economic realities and start a little shop in a town. But the Schwarzentrubers, about 70% of them are still on the farm, which means the family's together all day, every day. And there's something about that that I kind of like. I get worried when it comes to the children, mainly because they only go to school until the eighth grade. And even though they're bilingual by the time they get out, that's about the only skill they have. They can do simple math, and they can read, and they can speak two languages, but there's no emphasis on critical thinking at all.
What's the second language, Joe? Tell our listeners.
That's their Low German, or the Pennsylvania Dutch, as it's sometimes called.
Yes, okay.
But they all learn English by the time they're out of the eighth grade.
And, of course, the boys are generally well-prepared when it comes to construction and crafts. And,
that's right.
So, in a sense, they, if they were to choose to leave the faith and go out among the English, they would have some marketable skills. You spend a considerable amount of time on the women, though, the young women, and how ill-prepared they would be for a life outside of the sect.
Yeah, it's, of course, far easier for guys to leave, and many, many more guys do leave than women. Although, recently, there's starting to be more and more women leaving. But a guy can get a job in construction, and they're very good with their hands, and they can sleep on another guy's floor, and things get a little more complicated and dangerous when it's a woman going out on her own into an English world that she knows nothing of, and expects to find a place to live and get a job and try to make her way with an eighth grade education. And most of her skills are in the kitchen or doing basic things around the house. And although there's a certain market for that, it's not a very big one. And they, in the Amish world, they are at the bottom of the totem pole. I mean, it is a patriarchy from beginning to end. And if you have a kind and good father, like Samuel is, then he's a kind and good father with absolute authority. And if you have a not so kind or mentally disturbed father, then you have a mentally disturbed or unkind father with absolute authority.
Yes.
And young girls on the bottom of the rung, they have it. They have no power, no authority, and not much. They have very few weapons.
And children stay with the family until age 21, and then they are expected to marry and move on with their own lives that parallel and reproduce those of their ancestors, going back to the 1600s and the birth of the Anabaptist movement in Sweden, I believe. Correct.
Switzerland.
Yeah. We have a caller on line one from Bloomington. Let's see what he has to say, Joe.
Hello.
I
have a hard time understanding how they split certain things that are okay or not okay. And using your example of your neighbor who had to get special permission to ride with you in your vehicle, but it would have been okay for him to take a Greyhound bus. Why the distinction between a bus and a car?
Well, that's funny. It's a good question, and I get asked of it a lot, because most people can't understand why one thing is okay and something else isn't. And every single decision they make like that depends on is this going to keep our community strong, or is this going to weaken it in some way? And if they can get picked up by anyone in a car to go somewhere, they believe that's going to weaken their community. However, taking a Greyhound bus is an effort, if anyone knows who's ever done it, and these are on scheduled routes, and you're not asking, there's nothing, no one going out of their way to do something for you, and somehow that's okay with the Schwartz Intruders.
Okay.
And it doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense to us. Much of what they do doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. And the Amish themselves, at least the Schwartz Intruders I know, don't question it for a second.
For instance, I'm sorry, go ahead, caller.
Well, okay, they don't question it, but have you asked some of them about this distinction? And I wonder how they, do they give an answer similar to the one that you just gave?
Yeah, most of the time it's, that's the way it is.
Okay. All right.
Thank it's you. Actually, Joe, an interesting, you try to explain this, that obedience to the church and by extension the community is one of the central tenets. And so it matters not whether a decision looks arbitrary or silly or inappropriate. It is simply obedience to your community and your church, and by extension then your faith, that defines this entire life.
That's exactly it. I mean, in a nutshell, what you just said, Walt, is it.
We have a call from Eureka. And caller, welcome.
Thank you. An interesting conversation. I have heard estimates as high as 90% of the proportion of young persons who stay among the Amish community. Would you have any figures or any idea about those in the Schwarzendorf group that you're familiar with in Ohio?
Yes. Well, the Schwarzentrubers actually maintain more of their young than almost anybody. They maintain about 90% of their young, meaning that they stay in the Amish, they join the church and stay in the Amish faith. And whereas the New Order, who are far more liberal, they only keep about 45% of their kids. And I think the reason for that is the social chasm between the New Order Amish and 21st century America is not as wide as that between the Schwarzentruber Amish and contemporary America. I mean, if you want to leave the Schwarzentrubers and become 21st century English, that's a big leap.
You talked, Joe, about how some of that high percentage of people staying in the Schwarzentruber, you believe, is due to what you might call the negative consequences of moving over to the outside world. You talked about having an eighth grade education, but you also talk about how the Schwarzentrubers also utilize shunning in a way that completely isolates the usually the young person who's elected to try and leave from the community that, of course, has completely nurtured them for 18, 20 years of their lives, and that is itself also a very powerful, powerful, powerful tool in this process.
Yeah, it definitely is. There are, to be officially shunned and excommunicated, you have to have been baptized. But if that happens, you really are, it'd be the point where your sister couldn't pass you a plate of food and have you grab the other end of the plate. That's how complete the shunning would be.
You actually have in your a very central part of this very fascinating book, Plain Secrets, is the story of Jonas, who is a nephew of Samuel. And interestingly enough, when you went to Canada with Samuel more than a decade ago, and you were there with 400 people at the funeral, and you were at a mass dinner where people were sitting and eating at the afterward, you noticed a small boy looking at you curiously and shyly smiling in a way that none of the other children would look at you. And 10 years later, it was that boy who came to a neighbor's home of yours and sought to leave the sect.
That's right. Jonas, it's one of those kind of wild coincidences that writers are grateful for when they happen. But Jonas, actually, I didn't remember him. He brought it up to me. He said, you were at my grandma's funeral. We sat right across the table from each other. And maybe it would be something that a kid of 8 or 9 would remember an Amish kid who was sitting across from an English guy.
I suspect it had something to do with that. Even at age 10, this little boy already had reflections on this world that he was questioning.
I think that may very well be true, because he admits, even as a even younger than that, he was fascinated by, you know, cars and trucks and construction equipment. So there was something in him very early that longed to get out. But he did not. He has not been baptized, and so his shunning was not official through the church, but the church still communicated to his parents in no uncertain terms that they were not to be in touch with him and not to help him in any way and not to let him come home to see his siblings or to see his parents unless he was willing to stay.
Probably a third of your book is the ongoing story of Jonas. It took multiple efforts for Jonas to leave, and you so amply capture the difficulty of going out with no money, no skills. Also, the fact that he could not even prove that he was a United States citizen, because his family refuses to keep the appropriate paperwork, nor because of the unofficial shunning, as you called it, would they provide any help at all to even sign an affidavit that indicated that he had been born and lived in the country and was a United States citizen. So he could not get a passport. He couldn't get a driver's license. And several times, at least twice, he left and briefly and then returned. And then finally, he did leave. And you follow his story of really considerable travail that ends up actually, by the end of the book, to be quite hopeful. He has his driver's license. He has a truck, I believe. And he has a job. And he has cut his hair. He's dyed his hair blonde. He wears T-shirts and blue jeans. And unlike some who leave the Schwarzenegger, he has not gone wild or crazy, but really made an effort to build a sensible adult life in the English world.
That's true, and there's a whole group of ex-Schwarzentrubers around where I live who basically leave the order and then just go crazy partying and end up not doing anything until they've kind of worn themselves out, and then they think, well, the English world is about partying, I'm done with that, I'm going back home. Jonas said he actually partied more before he left the Amish. He would sneak out and party with some English friends, and but after he left, he kind of saw these other people as examples and decided not to go that route. But it's funny, Walt, we talk about how hopeful things are for him, and I think they are, and yet he's living with ex-Schwarzentruber guys who are all speaking the Low German or Pennsylvania Dutch. And he has not taken his GED yet, and now he's talking about not taking it at all. And his job is one without benefits and kind of low pay. Now, he's very happy with all these things, but there are some people who know they can hire ex-Amish very cheaply, and they do. And there's the Amish, the ex-Amish, and then the Amish who truly become English. And I'm worried that Jonas is going to stay ex-Amish. He'll never be considered English. He'll always be considered ex-Amish. And the last time I talked to him, his English was even getting worse because he'd been speaking Pennsylvania Dutch so much with the guys he's living with. So I'm not thoroughly unconcerned about him yet. But he's definitely made strides to leave, much more than anyone else I've ever known.
Joe, I have a couple of callers, but I've lost my screen here, and I'm hoping that our engineer will get it back up for us. I want to move ahead because I think one of the most interesting aspects of this experience, first I want to say that it's hard to convey on the radio and in conversation how beautifully written and gently turned and elegantly observed is your book, and I want to recommend it on that basis. It captures so beautifully the simple moments of wonder and beauty, and it captures in through your moments with the Shetler family while they're, for instance, slaughtering and boiling the hair off of hogs, or any number of the small things that they do day by day, and how all engrossing, and how you feel in those moments as if you've been transported to a place of humanity that is not nearly as common in our English existence. And I want to recommend compliment you and recommend the book to listeners on that basis.
Well, thanks very much for that. Well, it means a lot coming from you.
We have somebody calling from Champaign County.
Hello. How do the Amish acquire their land or property? Do they bank or take out loans or mortgages? Thank you.
Good question. Thank you. Most of the Schwarzentrubers that I know borrow from within families. For instance, Samuel, he has 86 acres, and his father-in-law and his father helped him buy that land. So they're the ones he owes the money to. They do bank on a simple level, as far as they don't keep their money under the mattress. They do have savings accounts. But that's about as far as it goes with the Schwarzentrubers. And part of the reason that some people don't like the Amish where I live is that there was a period, late 70s, very early 80s, when inflation was real high and there was a recession, that a lot of people lost their farms, and the Amish, Schwarzentrubers and Old Order, were moving from Wayne and Holmes County in Ohio, ended up buying up an awful lot of the land. And rub people the wrong way, or at least a certain group of people the wrong way.
Thank you. We have a call from Champaign.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to know, are Schwarzentruber Amish, Old Order Amish also?
Well, yeah, the Old Order umbrella is pretty big.
All right.
And it include the, technically the Schwarzentrubers split from the Old Order. But they're still kind of underneath that umbrella. Although more and more people are talking about the Old Order as separate from Schwarzentrubers. There's also an Andy Weaver Amish out here who are less conservative than what we call the Old Order. I mean, more conservative than the Old Order and less conservative than the Schwarzentrubers. But the Old Order is a pretty big umbrella and includes a lot of these sects that have officially or technically split from the mainstream Old Order.
I see. I wanted to know what happens if an Amish person stays or wants to stay in the community but wants to become a Mennonite. Does he still get ostracized?
Yes. You would be excommunicated and shunned if you became a Mennonite. I'll tell you, do I have time for a quick anecdote?
Sure.
Okay. Samuel's, his friend who lives across the street, and they're good friends, their kids go to the same one-room schoolhouse. The Amish man across the street's name is Uriah, and he has helped Samuel. They help each other fill their silos and everything. But they can't talk about church matters. And here's why. They once belonged to the same church, but the bishop decided to strike a compromise with the state of Ohio. The state of Ohio was trying to get the Schwarzentrubers to put the slow-moving vehicle triangle on the back of their buggies, but they refused to do that. So the compromise was, we'll put a second lantern on our buggies and 72 inches of reflecting tape. Now, Uriah and a group of Amish men of the church refused to put, they weren't willing to go along with adding the second lantern. And so they split and formed their own church. Now they're both families are Schwarzentruber Amish. But if one of Samuel's children left to join that church, that child would be excommunicated and shunned. And their kids could never marry each other without being excommunicated and shunned.
Is that the the background of the anecdote related to Samuel's daughter and a male friend of hers that you said could never actually marry because of that distinction?
Yes.
So it's right there in the Shetler family.
Yeah, and it's and if you looked at them, not everyone's going to notice that there's only one lantern. And since that split, Uriah's people have lowered women's dresses by another inch or so, which I didn't think they could be any lower. But you could never tell looking from the outside, really. But that's how those splits, and if there are splits at that level, you can imagine how many other splits there have been off of the Old Order and, you know, away from the Mennonites and everything else. The only way you stay in the community in good standing is to marry within your affiliation and stay in your church.
We have a call on a cell phone line, so we should probably take that, Joe.
Okay.
Hi. I was interested in the conversation when you were talking about the young people in the community, and I know that some of the Amish children follow this practice of Rumspringa, it's called.
Yes.
Where the kids basically are given a chance to sort of go wild. They have co-ed sleepovers at each other's houses. I saw a documentary about it where kids from, for example, five states, there were like 1,500 of them, kids from five states got together and partied for like a weekend or a week and so forth. And then I guess after a certain period of time, after a year or so, they make the choice to either go back to their community or not. And apparently a fairly high percentage of them choose to remain within the community. So I guess what I'm wondering is there a similar kind of practice among this Schwarzendruber sect that you're talking about? And I'll go ahead and hang up and listen on the radio.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, caller.
It's a great question. Rumspringa comes up a lot. I know exactly which documentary she's talking about because one of the Amish kids on Rumspringa ended up selling crystal meth. So he was pretty far out there. But the Schwarzentrubers do not have Rumspringa. And matter of fact, Samuel's wife, Mary, said to me, I hope that Rumspringa never comes here. Because in the way it comes there is that, you know, their church would change in a way that suddenly, or not so suddenly, but eventually Rumspringa would be part of the fabric of that affiliation, and then there would be Rumspringa. But right now the Schwarzentrubers do not have it.
Joe, I want to sort of raise a question here. A lot of the calls are focusing on the kinds of things that you more or less say in your book. You really hope that your book can keep people from exclusively focusing on the odd authority of the group, the patriarchal nature of the group, the shunning, the Rumspringa. And so much of what is beautiful about this book is that although you deal with all of those things, you really cross over inside this unknown world and you find a humanity that not only is parallel to the humanity in all of us, but in many ways you believe might even be superior.
I think particularly when it comes to, I mean, we've talked about the negative aspects of a tight community when it comes to, like, talking to Jonas's parents about not letting him in and the community being involved. But this community is extraordinary in some ways. When Samuel's daughter died, I could not believe the number of people who descended on that farm and did every last chore there was to do, and preserved food, and prepared the house for winter. Another man, just this winter, his house burned down, and within a week the house was back up, because every single Amish person in the community, no matter what they were doing, they dropped what they were doing and went to his aid. And I feel kind of ashamed for the way I'm really not part of a community in that way. Especially if you try to spend time by yourself, and there's something that I think is beautiful about that, and there's also some little moments inside their house with the kerosene lanterns on and laughing and with them, and
They have a wonderful sense of humor. You portray that in the book, that they're not dour and they're not always authoritarian. There's a gentleness and a caring and a love that jumps off the pages of your book.
Yeah, and I think it's a mistake to think that somehow they're just repressed and they would be much happier in our world, because with many of them, I'm convinced that they're extremely happy and content and in the lives that they're living. And who am I to say that we have a much better and they ought to leave that?
We have a call from Moultrie County. Are you there, Moultrie County? Joe, I want to talk to you about the impact of your book. It was clearly a very profound decision on the part of Samuel Shetler to allow you to do this and to let you into their house. And you cite any number of examples of times, for instance, you were standing talking with Mary Shetler, Samuel's wife, and would buy, and you knew that they were wondering what was she doing out there with an Englishman by herself. There were any number of times when you would be somewhere with Samuel and you knew that Samuel would be getting the evil eye because there he was with an English. And also Samuel had a wonderful sense of humor about that too. But when you approached Samuel about the book, Samuel said something that was really quite touching. He said, "I know you'd never hurt us." And I assume that as a writer that this weighed heavily on your mind, and yet your book also is a very balanced portrayal of what you perceive to be the good and the bad and the ugly of this world. But I want to ask you, what has been the response of Samuel, his family, his church?
Well, so far, I'm really happy with the way things are going. I got this agreement with my publisher that I wanted Samuel and Mary to read the book before it came out, because I did not want any surprises. I didn't want to get anything wrong either, and they were very good at catching little things. And so when they read it, it was actually a great day. When they read in manuscript form, we sat down and went through the book. And there were one or two little passages that they didn't say, "Take this out." They said, "I kind of wish I hadn't said that." And it was something small, like Samuel said something a little ungenerous about his brother-in-law. And I figured, you know, we've all been there.
So. And now that you've said it on the radio, it doesn't matter that you took it out of your book, right?
Well, that's true, I guess. but at least the specifics of what he said are still a secret. But I knew that, he knew that this could be, that things could come down on his head if it got out that he helped with this book. But there was also a part of him that knew that. He said, "With you, I know at least the Amish will get a fair shake, because I know that even though they're deeply insulated and want to be separate from the world, the way they're portrayed by the outside world is important to them, in as much as they have to deal with if they have good relationship with the English around them, their lives are easier."
So what have people said to Samuel? What did his bishop say? What did his church members say?
Well, his bishop and the other church members have not read the book or unaware of the book yet. But my worry is, see, Samuel's bishop is Jonas's uncle. So I haven't seen, last time I saw Jonas, I had given him the book, and I don't know, what I'm afraid of is that he's going to give it to his father and his uncle and tell him who's who in the book. And maybe then there will be some trouble. However, there's another aspect of this, is that Samuel is a minister in that church. He's very well respected. He's not a fringe Amish guy. I didn't want a fringe guy to talk to me about the Amish. He's deeply committed to Schwartz and Truber life. And he's very well respected. And I think even if they found out that he might get a talking to, but it wouldn't be... No punishment would be that severe, where if someone with less standing and who maybe was a little bit on the margins would pay a much heavier price if they found out that he'd been helping an English writer and telling them their secrets.
Well, I'd like you to let me send Mr. Shetler a letter through you and tell him how much I think that this book humanized the Schwarzenruber and how much more compassionate and compassion I feel myself toward them as a result of your efforts here.
You would love that.
I have one more idea. I wonder deeply about what Samuel and his family have learned about the English through you and your family. I mean, I know we're supposed to be learning something here about the Amish, but I can't help but wonder if Samuel and his family can't help themselves but wonder if the world outside is perhaps not as evil as they believed it was now that they've become friends with the foreign English.
Yeah, that's one of the dangers, right, is if the English people turn out to be kind of depraved, then it fits right with what they're taught.
But if they turn out not to be depraved,
that's right.
And what does that do?
Well, especially my wife, who is a Christian and in the best sense of the word, I like to add, they know what a good person she is, and they know the love that's in our family. I'm not sure about the adults, but I know that the way the kids react to her and to us when we're together, I'm pretty confident that the thought has crossed their minds that, wow, there's a lot of good English people too, and because there are some Amish who tell their kids that all English are going to hell, basically.
Well, has Samuel ever hinted at this?
No, he's more, a little more enlightened on that score, and I think a lot of them are. They're still convinced their way is the best way, but willing to believe that there are other paths to God, or however you want to look at it.
The book Plain Secrets, An Outsider Among the Amish by Joe Mackle. I recommend it highly if you want to take a trip into a foreign land right here in rural Ohio. Joe, when you look back at the whole experience, what is it that you took away more than anything?
I think more than anything, I took away that I don't see Samuel as kind of the Amish man and the Amish family much. There have been, like, we've had little tiny spats that are really good because it's a real friendship now. It's not just the English guy and the Amish guy. But there's a peace at the center of that life that I envy and want. There's a serenity there, at least in the Shetler home, that I want a piece of. And as often as I go over their house, that's where I feel it. What I'm trying to do now is live away from that place as if I have a piece of that with me. And I know it sounds a little touchy-feely or New Agey or something, but it's a very real thing what they have, and it can only be good for, I won't speak for everybody, but it would certainly be good for me to have a little more of what they have.
Well, I suppose what they have is family, community, faith, love, commitment. Those are not bad things if negotiated in the proper way.
Right.
Joe, I want to thank you for spending this time with us today. It's a beautiful book. Again, Plain Secrets, An Outsider Among the Amish by Joe Mackle. Good luck with your relationship with Samuel and Mary and their 9 children. And I hope that you're able to find that little piece of something in your own life that you find in theirs.
Thanks a lot, Walt.
Thank you, Joe.